ETA or ETA has declared a permanent ceasefire without a comprehensive agreement with the Spanish government. So the first question today is why organizations like ETA or ETA don't work like that. They don't declare permanent ceasefires as a first step on before process, a peace process. So I want to try to answer that question, but I'm going to focus more on one dimension of that answer, because my special report is a more political analysis of the situation, and that is already published, and I think you can find there most of the ideas I think are important to understand what is going on. But my research at the Institute is focused specifically on the role of the peace movement or the civil society. My main idea here is that it's been a very, very important factor to understand this issue. Probably the main factor to understand why it has declared such an important ceasefire. Also, I want to say before anything that my personal background will condition this presentation. Of course, I've been a member of one organization of this peace movement for more than 10 years. So obviously, I can't have the capacity to have a totally neutral perspective on the situation, and I think this is something that needs to be explained very clearly at the beginning. But I also think that this participation, being inside the conflict, and as a part of an organization like this for 10 years, has also provided me the internal perspective of everything that was going on. So now in this, I think you will be able to balance and take my ideas with also the necessary perspective. So I rather consider myself an internal partial, as USIP likes to describe this kind of organizations, and I'm totally happy with that description. So this is, of course, the perspective that will guide this presentation. In this special report, I talk about this group of factors to understand this permanent ceasefire. Social factors, factors that are connected with civil society, political factors, and international factors. And I think normally in any context like this, we need to look at all those different dimensions. In regards with civil society, I will explain with some authors called the process of cognitive liberation, the way the Basque society has transitioned from fear, from being trapped in the dynamics of the conflict, to a situation of playing a very active role against violence, opposing violence, and being a very important actor itself. At the political level, I think we can discuss this a little bit more later. There are two main factors that need to be considered. The first one is, of course, the new administration in Madrid. We have a new government in Madrid that has a totally different approach to the Basque issue. Not only to the Basque issue, but to the whole discussion in Spain about different nationalities and about the way that the Spanish state should be organized. This new administration is now discussing and negotiating with different autonomous regions within the state, the autonomous system. Catalonia has already agreed a new status. Andalucía yesterday was discussing this in the parliament in Madrid. So it's for the first time since the transition to democracy in Spain, there is an open debate, a normalized debate, I think a very healthy debate about the way the Spain should be organized. And this also has an impact on the discussion about violence and about the discussion of the Basque area. This administration is playing a very proactive role for the first time as well since the transition time, is playing a very proactive role towards a peace process. Just, well, a couple of months before this announcement, President Zapatero went to the Congress, to the Spanish Congress, and asked for their support to establish a process of dialogue with ETA in case that this organization would declare a serious ceasefire. So we have a new administration in Madrid with different attitudes. Secondly, I think at the political level, we are now, or we can now see and analyze the impact of the political proposal that the Basque government presented a couple of years ago for free association with Spain. We will know more about this proposal in this event with President Ibarretxe. It was a very controversial, highly controversial proposal in the Basque area and Spain. The Basque Parliament supported this proposal, but then the Spanish Congress rejected this proposal of free association because the Congress considered that they were asking for a lot of powers that were not, or for a framework that wasn't included in the Spanish Constitution. But apart from that discussion, or more a legal or political discussion, what is a fact is that the presentation of this proposal in the Basque area has had a tremendous impact in ETA, in ETA's constituency. Because for the first time, a lot of nationalist or independentist supporters saw that there was a proposal, a very concrete proposal, that was trying to achieve through peaceful means some of the goals that ETA was trying to achieve through violence. And the fact was that a lot of people within this constituency felt more attracted to this possibility of a democratic way to defend these ideas rather than the use of violence. So this is the other important political factor. And at the international level, I think the September 11 and more concretely the Madrid bombings have also had a tremendous influence on the situation. As you know, ETA was blamed for this bombing for a couple of days. There are still some people who will argue that ETA had some kind of connections, although the Spanish police and the Spanish government has said very clearly that there is no evidence that there was such a connection. But for ETA, this connection to be included in the club of Al-Qaeda and this new emerging violent groups, it is a very negative circumstance for them. They have a very romantic view of their past, a very romantic view of their own present, and they don't identify themselves at all with Al-Qaeda and these groups. So this was a factor that connected to the situation in Northern Ireland that was a real reference for ETA for a very, very long time. This also has had an impact on them. ETA, in those years, saw that internationally they were associated to Al-Qaeda, while the IRA, that those that they want to be associated with, had decided to stop violence. And also, the Republican movement in Ireland decided to play a very active role to convince ETA and to facilitate ETA this process towards non-violence. So these are the main factors that, if you want, we can discuss a little bit more later. But all these factors are creating a situation of a very incipient but a very solid a peace process. The Spanish government is verifying this ceasefire just last week or this week has announced that they that this process of verifying the ceasefire is almost complete successfully, and they are all discussing about the methodology of the political dialogue that should take place. And also, they have announced that there will be direct contacts between the Spanish government and ETA in the next few months. So we are at the initial step of a peace process, and I wouldn't like to give a too optimistic perspective of the situation. I mean, there are solid arguments to believe that is a very important and positive reality, but there are serious risks and difficulties. The first risk or the first difficulty is how to incorporate the memory of the victims to the process. In Spain and in the Basque area, the associations and foundations of victims are very influential. They are playing a very active role in all this discussion, and they don't feel that their ideas, their suggestions are taken into consideration from the Spanish government and from the Basque part, etc. And as we've seen in many parts of the world, it is crucial for us to find a way to incorporate this dimension at the first beginning of the process. The second difficulty is the situation of illegalization of the pro-independentist movement. The political wing of ETA, Batasuna, is not a legal party in the area. There are some other organizations associated to this movement that are not legal anymore. So if we are going to see all party talks going on, we need to have a legal representative of this political tradition. And this is a problem that the Spanish government will have to face in the next few months if we really want to see an inclusive process. Related to this problem, we also have the problem of the prisoners. ETA has more than 700, around 700 prisoners in the Spanish and French prisons. This is a very high number. If we are talking about a Basque population of less than 3 million people, and the influence of the prisoners in this situation, but especially their impact on ETA is really, really significant. And this is the, when you talk to those who are still defending violence, this is the last emotional argument whenever there is a real discussion about it. I have had opportunity to, in my research, to have a lot of interviews with Basque militants, and I found it very interesting that they don't justify the use of violence because the political structure, because the political framework. The last argument is, look at the situation of our prisoners. They are all dispersed around Spain and France. Their families have to travel thousands of kilometers to see them for 20 or 40 minutes, and they are dying on the roads, and this is a situation that needs to be confronted. So, of course, it's a totally unacceptable argument to justify violence, but it's a very powerful argument to for those who are still given support to this Muslim. And the last difficulty is to find a method to reach an agreement or reach consensus about the methodology of the process. I think that Basque and Spanish political parties haven't invested the time and the resources to reach an agreement on methodology. When you talk to them about this, they all say, well, the real discussion is about political content. If we agree on the ideas, there is no problem about the methodology. But we know that this is not the reality in most of the cases. Just in Ireland, it took them 2 years to reach an agreement about the methodology, less than the time that they were actually negotiating the political content. So this is another problem that we'll need to face shortly. And also the challenges. I think that in terms of the political contents, there are two main challenges that I try to explain in my report. The issue of sovereignty, how to find a way to approach sovereignty differently. How to approach it in a way that is not black and white, that we are not talking about the situation, the political framework, as something that cannot be discussed, or the possibility of a Basque nation state. These black and white possibilities are no longer the only ones possibilities within the European Union. So I think the challenge, the political challenge, will be to find a way to address sovereignty in a different way. And there are already ideas, very concrete ideas, about how to do it. And the second challenge is what the nationalist parties describe as the territorial relations. For the Basque nationalist parties, the Basque autonomous region and the region of Navarra and the French territories with Basque heritage, they should be able to develop more important links in terms of political and cultural issues. It is a very difficult problem, but there are also ideas to approach it in a different way. Okay, so well, this is the situation that we are facing now, in my opinion. But now I want to focus on the influence of the Basque peace movement to understand what is going on. Let me tell you first that I have had a theoretical problem to address this. First of all, because I don't come from academia, and secondly, because when we talk about the Basque peace movement, we are talking about two different theoretical perspectives. We have the perspective of the social movements theory, and then we have the perspective of conflict management theory. And peace movements are always a little bit in the middle, because conflict management theory focuses more on organizations like USIP or others. But so peace movements are normally something different. They are a mix of organizations, and they need to also to be studied in a different way. I have followed different theoretical frameworks, but I found very useful a recent doctoral study presented in Bradford University about the Colombian peace movement and about how to describe a peace movement in our world today. And this is more basically what I'm going to follow. When I talk about the Basque peace movement, I'm talking about very different actors, of course. But in order to have a very concrete presentation, in order to be able to focus on very tangible aspects, I will be talking about three organizations that are, I think, the leading organizations of what we can consider the Basque peace movement. These are Gesto por la Paz, ECARI, and Ambastaya. But of course, I want to clarify that the Basque movement is much more than those organizations. There are more organizations than those three, and also we should take into consideration the role played by the Basque Church, the role of the political parties, the role of the trade unions, and many other organizations. But let me tell you about these three, because I think they are very different, and they represent very different dimensions of this work for peace in the Basque area. Gesto por la Paz was created in 1986. This was the first peace organization in the area, and I think the first organization we can consider the first peace activists in the area. These people were able to organize vigils, concentrations, silence concentration against any killing during the 80s. And the 80s in Spain and the Basque area were the most difficult years in relation with violence. We had some years with more than 100 people killed per year. We had bombings in Madrid, in Barcelona, many civilians targeted and killed, and they were really, really difficult years to work for peace. And these people were able to, were the first one to go out, in, but not just in one or two places in areas that could be safe for them. These people were able to organize very small concentrations in almost every town, every village in the Basque area to protest in silence for 10 minutes after any killing. And they were also the first ones to do it with all the killings. And those who are coming from situations, zones of conflict, you know how difficult it is. Because normally you have to situate yourself in one side or the other. And these people were able to say, well, we are going to oppose any killing, and they had to receive also the criticism from both sides. These people also, for a very long time, had to organize these concentrations, these vigils, with the calling for the Basque police or the Spanish police to secure the situation. Because for many years, the pro-independentist movement would call for anti-demonstrations in front of them. In some areas where there are like 100, 200 people living in a very small town, you will see these people demonstrating, and just 1 meter in front of them, they would have another demonstration insulting them and threatening them. So for many years, these people were able to show publicly that there was a way to oppose violence. Also, they were the first ones to talk about the necessity to incorporate the memory of the victims to the process. El Khari was born in 1992, and El Khari was born when all this work was already done. So it was easier to talk about peace and to oppose violence. But El Khari incorporated the ideas related to dialogue. So what we were doing was to, in that process of cognitive liberation, we were presenting an alternative. Gesto was able to say, we don't agree with violence. El Khari was born to say, there is an alternative. And the alternative is inclusive dialogue. It is a new agreement with more consensus than the one that we have at the moment. And El Khari was also the first local organization to promote Track 2 initiatives. And it is, I think, well known for the peace conferences that were organized between 1992 and the year 2005. The third organization is Bastaya. Bastaya was born in around 1997, connected to those tragic events that happened in the town of Ermua in the Basque area. The ETA kidnapped a very young politician associated to the ruling party in Madrid, and they threatened the Spanish government to kill this young guy, this young politician, to kill him if the Basque prisoners were not going to be transferred to the Basque area. And the Spanish government couldn't accept the blackmail, and this local politician was killed. So during those 48 hours and after after the killing, thousands of people in the Basque area in Spain took the streets to oppose this atrocious killing. And it was the first time also that many people in the Basque area in Spain was saying what Bastaya means. It is enough. And before, Gesto por la Paz and El Carri were conducting more, you can say, politically correct discourse, but Bastaya was a reaction to that fury accumulated for years and years of violence. So also in a very controversial way, Bastaya was able to talk about not only the end of violence, but the necessity to recognize and to implement the fundamental liberties of those people in the Basque area who didn't agree with the pro-independentist movement. And they follow up in some way the work initiated by Gesto por la Paz in relation with the victims. They were able to support the associations of victims to play a more political role. It needs to be said as well that Bastaya, from the first day, was really critical with the role played by Gesto por la Paz and El Carri, accusing them or us of being naive in some cases, but also of collaborate with nationalist mentality in terms of approaching the problem. So as we can see, there are three very different movements interacting, but also fighting each other all the time. And one of my main doubts when I was trying to organize my ideas for this research is if we can consider all these organizations being so different part of the same movement. And I have discovered that in many parts of the world, it is always the same thing, that there is no peace movement where all the organizations get on really well with each other, that they cooperate, that the normal thing is that what has happened in the Basque area, that we fight to each other all the time, and that there are very lot of components to understand this, but this is a normal thing. And so what is important is to identify if there are common values, and at the end of the day, if we're all going in the same direction. And my guess is that we were, because we were all opposing violence, and we were all creating the conditions for a peace process. But I will understand if somebody here in the room doesn't agree with this opinion. So one of the most fascinating things I have discovered in my research is that the dynamics of influence, and I have to check this with other realities, is, and some theoretical work has, I think, been describing this very clearly, is that peace movements cannot influence the entire society. It doesn't happen any part of the world. So peace movements or peace organizations have the capacity to influence certain sectors of the society. And So in our case, we have the Basque society divided between the Basque nationalist side and the Spanish, what we call Spanish constitutionalist side, and all different parties. And if we check out the three different organizations, let's start with the first one. El Carri was able to influence one part of the society. Let's say from the independentist movement till certain sectors of the Basque Socialist Party. Then Gesto por la Paz was able to influence some other parties more in the mainstream political arena, from some nationalist moderates to the Socialist Party. And Basta Ya was able to influence the popular party, the right-wing party in Spain, and the Socialist Party. So without knowing what we were doing, I think we were constructing a network that was able to influence all different sectors of the society. And I think this is normal, because those organizations who are born in a situation like this, they all have connections to some parts of the society, or stronger connections rather than other parts. And my guess is that if they don't do that, they cannot really influence the society. If they don't have those limitations to influence the entire society, they are not able to influence more that specific part of the society. Because in a situation of conflict, people need to feel that those organizations are affiliated to them. And when we are in the middle of the conflict, there is nobody who is neutral. You are always closer to one side or the other. So what is a limitation, I think it is also... It was also a very interesting tool for being able to influence those sectors. And the contrary example in the Basque area in Spain will be Amnesty International. Amnesty International is a very well-respected, reputed organization in the Basque area. Their statements about the Basque conflict, about anything, are very well considered. But they don't have an impact. They are not able to influence those people in a very serious way. They cannot mobilize those people because they don't feel attached to this organization. It is too balanced for a situation of conflict. So my next chapter about lessons learned will try to elaborate this idea a little bit more, because maybe we normally tend to feel associated with those organizations all around the world that have a very comprehensive analysis, that they are able to take all different nuances. But maybe those organizations are not the ones who have the capacity to influence their own realities. And maybe when we are trying to support work in those parts of the world, we need to find organizations that are not as politically correct or as good analytically as those ones, but they have real capacity to influence their society. And maybe the key is to create a network of organizations that are able to include all different traditions. Okay, so this is the, I think, the way it has worked. And let me tell you now about the types of influence. Because this is Roxanne Mayer, one of my colleagues, was advising me about this. I think she is totally right that the key issue here is how to establish concrete, real cause-effect analysis. About, because to say that the peace movement has influenced the reality need to be explained very well. We need to be able to say, this is the way it happened, here. We need to have tangible instruments. So I think we can find those very clear elements in public opinion. Can we go to the slide of public opinion? Because this, I think it's the next one. Yeah. In public opinion, in the area, of course, I'm not saying that public opinion in the Basque area has changed just because the work of the peace movement. But it's very clear that those people in Gesto por la Paz that went out to the streets, those people afterwards that were saying very clearly, we oppose violence, we want an alternative, those were able to influence somehow members of their community. So if we see a survey conducted in 1981, most of the people were already against violence. We can see that. We see those who were in complete opposition were the majority. But 48% of the people in 1981 didn't want to answer the question. Why? Because they feared about what they were saying, because the situation was too dangerous. They didn't want to say what else. They didn't want to talk about it. Maybe they didn't want to how to articulate that. In 2005, it was 3% of those people. 56% of the people clearly presented their opposition to violence. So I think there is a very tangible element there to understand. Can go back to the types. The second area is the discourse. And the discourse and the agenda, because I think they are related. Gesto por la Paz has always, since the first beginning, always demanded to differentiate the discussion about violence, about the process, about the end of violence, and the political framework. That was their key message. And if you follow today's discussion in Madrid and the Basque area, these two levels are totally separated. The Spanish government, the Basque government, even ETA for the first time, they accept that these are going to be two different, two separate issues. The Spanish government is going to talk to ETA about the end of violence, and the political parties are going to discuss about political issues. This can be something normal in other parts of the world, but for us, for many, many years, these were elements that couldn't be separated. El Carri, for example, I think influenced very, very clearly the discourse about the old party talks. Nowadays, the Basque government, main political parties are demanding old party talks. The Spanish government hasn't presented a very clear statement about this, but the discussion is about that. Well, and El Carri was the first organization to say, we need that. We need to establish that forum where everybody is going to be included. And also as a part of the agenda, Bastaya was able to include the issue of victims. It is not possible anymore to have a peace process in the Basque area without the issue of the victims. They need to be incorporated. And this is the challenge we'll be facing soon. In terms of political strategies, we have also seen very clear that these organizations have had an impact. For example, Bastaya organized an event in the regional elections in the year 2000 and invited the two main Spanish political parties, the Popular Party and the Socialist Party. So in this event, Bastaya asked these two parties to make a coalition to confront the Basque nationalists in those elections. They were not going in the same lists, but they made a public statement that if they had votes to change the coalition, the Socialist Party and the Popular Party would be working together in Basque politics. And as you can see, these are the two main parties in Spain. It's like having the Democrats and the Republican agreeing that it doesn't matter what happens, but we are going to work together in the government if we have the necessary votes. So for a peace organization to be able to influence in such a clear way, of course, that these parties didn't accept that just because this organization. But the fact is that this event was organized by this group. The leaders of the parties went there, and they made a public statement about this. So it is fascinating to see how deep in political terms they were able to connect with the parties. And they also were, peace organizations were also very influential in terms of creating new actors. The organizations themselves are new political actors. Wherever Bastaya says, or Gesto por la Paz, or El Cari, will have an impact on the political discourse. There were other organizations created around them. And they also facilitated these associations and foundation of victims to be established. And also in the case of El Cari, El Cari introduced new actors related to the mediators, because we didn't have very significant mediators before. And for example, in this last declaration of permanent ceasefire, the key person who facilitated the contact with him, the independentist movement and the Spanish government, seems to have been Father Alec Reed, who is a mediator coming from Northern Ireland, who has been playing a very active role there. And El Cari was the organization who went to Ireland, to Belfast, and asked this priest to come and play an active role in the Basque area. We don't know what could have happened, but the fact is this was a crucial element of this permanent ceasefire. And of course, there were undesired effects that also we could discuss further if you want. But as a conclusion, I would like to say that I think the Basque Peace Movement has definitely had an impact on the situation, on what we describe as peace writ large, so about the situation, the conditions to create a peace process in three stages. The first stage, the Basque Peace Movement was able to make public the opposition to violence. Secondly, it was able to present an alternative based on dialogue. And thirdly, it has also had an indirect influence on ETA. Let me show you the last slide, because this is connecting with the first thing I said at the beginning of the presentation. In my opinion, ETA has declared a ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire, because they realize that their own constituency do not support violence anymore. An organization like ETA needs to have their own constituency supporting them in terms of facilitating safe places, money, etc. But they also need to have a political constituency supporting their ideas. And any killing was going against them in political terms. And if we see this survey made in May 2005 and November 2005, for the first time, ETA constituency, those who have been voting for Batasuna, they are saying, the majority of them say, we support the goals only. We don't support violence anymore. So for an organization like ETA, this is crucial. Whenever they realize that most of their people are not backing them anymore. And I think to understand why their own constituency has changed from a very clear support to minority support, I think we have to see that in the context of the whole society, how the whole society changes, and how this peace movement has been able to influence. Okay, well, thank you very much, and happy to take your questions now.
Thank you. Well, let's open up the floor for questions then, and please, when you're asking your question, introduce yourself, tell us your name and your affiliation, and then give your question and try and be as brief as possible so that we can get all the questions in before 2 p.m.
Bill Zarpin at Slice, thank you. These polls and some of these indications are often very useful in that they open up further questions, because they can mean many things in them, in the themselves. And I wonder whether this ends-means shift is because the supporters saw the ends in sight, and therefore the means were no longer necessary, or whether they thought the ends were not important enough anymore to justify the means. I have another question, too, but you don't...
I didn't see too many hands to start off with, so if you want to ask two, I think that would be fine.
The other question has to do with this sovereignty business. We're messing up the notion of sovereignty. It's not supposed to be the same as independence and this kind of stuff. But there's been a lot of criticism, as you know, about Zapatero and his, some of his ideas about actually breaking up Spain, particularly in Catalonia and now in the Basque territory. Is the notion of the Basque supporters, that is, again, the ENDS people, really a foot in the door to achieve total 100% UN membership, independence, and sovereignty? Or are they happy with some kind of self-government happy and satisfied with some kind of self-government within a ultimately sovereign and independent and unified Spain?
Thank you. I don't think, in regards to the first question, I don't think the goals are not important for them anymore. I think the goals are as important as they were in the past. But the pressure against violence, the political pressure, the social pressure against violence is so important that they can't justify it anymore. So what I think is, what we probably will see is if the ceasefire is verified and we have elections in the short term and they are able to present candidates, we'll see the support for the pro-independentist movement will rise. We'll have more people supporting that. So in regards to your question, the goals are still there. But it's just the whole connection between violence and politics has been so terrible in our situation that it really has created a different situation. In regards to the second question, what you said is very important. I think in Spain, in the Basque area, there are two types of debates. There is the public debate and there is the real debate. The public debate is the black and white debate. It's the discussion about Spain breaking up, about the Basque nationalists accepting anything but independence. But when you talk to these leaders, they all know that is not a real debate. And I think, I personally think what Zapatero and this administration is doing, and I don't think I can be accused of a support of Zapatero till now, I think what he's doing is, in some ways, is making Spain stronger, as he says. Because those problems about how to deal with the demands from Catalonia, the demands from the Basque area, and the demands from the were already there. So just avoiding the discussion wasn't making the problem disappear. I think Zapatero has been able to say there is a discussion to be need to be made, and there are political means within the Spanish Constitution to do that in a normal way. And he has presented an agreement in Catalonia that very few people thought it was going to be possible. So this is what we have at the moment. And if you go to the Basque nationalists, they all of them, including ETA, realize that they cannot impose a situation of independence to a population that doesn't want it. And this is the first idea you will hear whenever you ask me. And for the first time, even ETA is making this public. If you read the last statements coming from ETA, they no longer say that they kill for the independence of the Basque country. They say they are killing to have the possibility, that the Basque people have the possibility to decide their own future. Meaning that they are ready to accept whatever the majority of the people say. Then it's a more complex thing whenever, because when you get into the practical terms, they mess up everything, and it ends up being a very undemocratic statement. But my humble opinion, there is no real discussion in Spain and in the Basque area about the creation of a Basque nation state today. What it is all about is about finding a new agreement that can accommodate those ideas from the constitutionalist or the Spanish parties and those ideas from the nationalist side. In practical terms, there is a very concrete proposal made by representatives of very different parties and legally backed by constitutionalists from Spain. It says one possibility will be that to transfer from the Spanish government to the Basque authorities and the Navarrese authorities, if they want it, the capacity to call for non-binding referendums. So just with that agreement, the Basque nationalist people could say, well, if we have a problem with Madrid, we can always ask the Basque people what do they think. And in doing so, we are exercising our sovereignty. And in some constitutionalists from Spain, from Madrid, are saying that doesn't suppose, the Spanish constitution doesn't need to be changed for that. So there are ideas and there are possibilities that in a context of a peace process and without the pressure of the violence could be addressed, and I'm totally convinced that agreement is possible.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear from Phoebe and Ginny, and then you. And I apologize for the situation with the microphone. We're having someone take a look at that right now. Okay, so Phoebe, why don't you start?
Yes, I really enjoyed that talk. Very helpful. Two questions. One, I think, quick, and the other. You said at the beginning of your talk that one of the things that influenced change was the concentration in Madrid. Party outlook. And I guess my question to you is then whether this cultural change is going to transcend administrations, because of course you've got to get something that takes account of different administrations. On the ends means issue, sort of addressing the same thing, we've seen a change in the so forth. I'm wondering in the long run how much of that has been influenced by push-pull factors, by the pull factor of Spain, which is clearly more democratic and obviously more prosperous. So that I imagine, I don't know the Basque country, that people living in the Basque country see something that's attractive. This goes to costs and, I don't want to say cost-benefit analysis, but if you have aims, violence is one of the means you're using, to change them. You keep the aims. You really don't want to change your aims, but the means don't seem worth it because of these more attractive things. And I wonder if you could address this. Maybe it isn't so much that the ends have changed, but there's something more attractive out there that makes the cost of violence.
So let's start with some questions.
Thank you for a very enlightening and rich discussion. I have three questions. The first one has to do with the Basque Catholic Church, which was one of the elements that you put to the side. And I wonder if you could elaborate a bit on the influence of the church in the organizations themselves, because this is a societal institution that presumably can't be kind of removed from the peace movement. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about that. Secondly, you talked about the conditions for change, including the creation or the kind of the publicity that there's an alternative, which is mainly dialogue. And I wonder if you could give us a little bit more specifics about how that alternative was presented to the public. Was it just through the peace congresses that were organized? Were there different ways that dialogue was put on the agenda of the political actors? And finally, just a question about the role of civil society in the next stage in terms of implementation of some sort of a more comprehensive agreement.
My name is Christina Cern. I'm with the OAS Human Rights Commission. I'm not a specialist on Spain, so I think I missed the subtext of your talk because I don't know what these different movements represent politically. But my interest in coming is to understand the space between autonomy and independence and some of these concrete proposals that you mentioned. And specifically, if you could give a bit more background information as to what does autonomy consist of in Spain, what was the Catalunian agreement, and is this what the Basque region is aspiring to, or if not, how is it different, and what are these different gradations?
Okay. Well, because of a previous question, I don't have a positive answer for that in terms of the what happens if the government changes. At the moment, there is not a consensus in Spain about this issue. The opposition party has supported the Spanish government in exploratory talks with ETA to verify the end of violence, but nothing more. In a more clear way, they say they want the Spanish government to do what they did in the past, what they say they did, that was to go to see if ETA wanted to surrender. So this is what they want to know, and that's their position. So I think if we will see a change in the government, I think they will have a very clear impact on the situation. But as we normally used to say, this is a real conflict, and this is totally imperfect. You cannot have all the elements, and what we have a lot, and we have to work with them. And I wish we could have that other one. And I think it's necessary to work a lot to incorporate the opposition party to the process. Sooner or later, it will be necessary. But nowadays, it is a weakness of the process. Secondly, I don't have a clear answer to the second question, because I think, for example, of course, the democratization, I can't say that at all. The process to democracy, it has had a very positive impact on the self-government that we have experienced in the Basque area, because as I will try to explain later, we have the highest level of self-government for a non-state within the European Union. So that has clearly had an impact in political terms. And that's why the majority of the nationalist community in the area identify themselves with moderate perspectives. But they have done, it's been like that since the end of dictatorship. Because normally we tend to associate Basque nationalism with violence, as the majority of Basque nationalists would support violence, and it's not the case. And it hasn't been the case since the end of dictatorship. But that minority that is supporting violence is big enough to keep the problem going. So I would say that the democracy has had an impact in Spain, and self-government as well, because people see the benefits of self-government, and it's not black and white anymore. So you see that there's difference. But in terms of the economical development, I wouldn't say that has been such an important factor. First of all, because if you check the support for nationalism at the end of the dictatorship and the support now, it's almost the same. The difference is the support for violence. But the identity that is behind the whole movement is the same. And economics have an impact, but I think in the Basque area, people don't change their political views because the economy. It has an impact, but it doesn't affect the identity. And if you see, it's very interesting to see in the Basque area, those who are voting for the parties in the last 25 years, they can change the party, but they don't change the identity in terms that the parties are divided as well in identity. And you can see some people who feel themselves Basque and Spanish, they can vote for the Socialist Party in one election and the next election for the Popular Party, but they don't change and vote for the Basque Nationalist Party. And the Basque people who vote for the Basque Nationalist Party can change and vote for another Nationalist Party, but they normally don't change for. So, and we have experienced in a very important economical transition, because there it's a wealthy area, but during the 80s we suffer the consequences of the crisis very, very importantly. The Catholic Church play a role. Some people say that it hasn't played the role that it should have played, because in the Basque area and Spain, we are all Catholic. So I was discussing with Mandy about the slides, and I said Basque Church, and then I said, well, I think I should explain that it's Catholic, because but you know we don't have it's Catholic Church or others.
Yeah, others.
So that's an interesting thing, because I mean, it doesn't matter how you identify yourself, is Spanish or Basque or whatever, is, you know, we are under the same umbrella, and the Basque Church and the Spanish Church, they have different approaches to the situation, different approaches. But in the case of the Basque Church, they have played a role. For example, Hasto is very connected to the Basque Church. A lot of people, a lot of their leaders are very active members of the Catholic Church. Their headquarters in Bilbao are paid by the Catholic Church. Although they have always maintained a sort of a distance, say, well, we are different things. In El Cari as well, the first group of people who created the organization, a lot of them were Catholic activists, in terms of, you know, they were members of the Catholic Church. In the case of Bastalla, I think it's different. Bastalla has a component more of intellectuals, academics, journalists, normally more left-wingers, and I don't think there is, and they have all actually criticized the Basque Church very, very, very clearly. And for example, they have played a role. The Bishop of San Sebastian was the mediator between the Spanish government and ETA in the previous ceasefire in 1998, and now they have been supporting the work of Father Alec Reed. This is a very controversial issue, because he was there, he stays, well, his place is within the headquarters of the Basque Catholic Church in Bilbao, but officially there was no connection. And now there is a discussion between the Spanish Church and the Basque Church and this Father Reed about what is he doing, if he's doing well or not. It is a very interesting situation. And then the Basque Church has direct contact with the Vatican, because there are senior members of the Catholic Church of the Vatican that are from the Basque area. Concretely, there is a cardinal from the Basque French area, Echegaray, that is a very influential person within the Vatican. So there, and also this Pope was one of the first ones to support the situation after the declaration of permanent ceasefire. So it's there is a very interesting network and role that that's been played there. The alternative was presented, I think, through practice. First of all, people experience the alternative by themselves because hundreds and thousands of forums were organized at the local level. Almost in each town in the Basque area, there have been discussions where people from different traditions were invited to talk. And by experiencing, they were able to see, first of all, that their ideas were not that far away and that dialogue could present an alternative. And it was a very interesting thing because Al-Khari was conducting or organizing a lot of these forums. And at some point, the political parties knew much more about what was going on at the local level that we did, because we were just organizing the events. But the parties wanted to know what their people were saying in those forums. And whenever they saw that people were reaching agreements, then I think that had an impact on them, because they were the leaders who had to do the agreements and the local level that was happening. Then also, whenever they saw for the first time that the parties were sitting down in the same places, talking to each other, just to see that possibility was very clear and visual. And thirdly, because we presented very concrete ideas and proposals. 99% of those disappear, are on the rabbits, or whatever you want to call it. But the exercise was to be as detailed as possible about everything. If we talk about prisoners, if we talk of victims, what is your idea, your proposal? This is what I think. This is what can be done. Everything, as concrete as possible. And the parties, their reaction, the initial reaction of the parties is always not to take it in consideration, because you are telling them what to do. But it is interesting to see that 2, 3, 4 years later, a lot of those ideas that were presented in those forums are picked up by party members, and they say, this is my proposal. And it's exactly what was presented 3, 4 years ago, and you thought that they never thought about it. The role of civil society now is, it will be a difficult one, because now I think the tendency will be to wait and see what the political elites are going to say. And the discussions between the governments and ETA and the parties will mark the rhythm, I think. But there is still, in our case, because we have such an influential network, I think it will be important to maintain that network in case that problems emerge. And I think problems will emerge. We'll be the first peace process in the world without problems. So I think this is going to happen. And whenever we are in the middle of a crisis, I think that kind of network, supporting the process, supporting the parties, telling them, well, what you are doing is supported by all these people, that will help a lot. It will be, I think, the opposite situation that we had in Northern Ireland, where the politicians reach an agreement, and then they have to sell that agreement to their own people. And we are experiencing the opposite situation. I think the Basque society is ready for an agreement, and they are putting pressure on the politicians. In terms of more information, what are we talking? I think the special report can give you a little bit more information about that, but. As I said, we have a very high level of self-government. And probably, I don't think our problem is a problem of autonomy or powers anymore. Because we have our own police, our own education, we even raise our own taxes. That is the only one place in Europe, that's why I say it's one of the highest places. So we have almost everything except borders, army, and social security. Those are the... and representatives of the international community, those kind of things. So the discussion focused more on the symbolic issues, and that's why our problem. A lot of people say that this is a more difficult problem now, because when you have very concrete issues to negotiate about, then you can deal with that. But now we are dealing with symbolic issues, and symbolism is always a problem for everybody. So we need to find a way to describe our situation in terms of sovereignty, where people who feel Basque feel, you know, my identity and my sovereignty as a Basque is fully recognized, and his neighbor, the one who lives in the door in front of him, who feels Spanish, says, I am Spanish, and my sovereignty and my identity as Spanish is fully recognized in this political framework. And this, and that's possible. So it is, I don't think we need to change a lot about the powers. Maybe a representative of the Basque government will tell you that Social Security is crucial for our sovereignty. But I think it's just a matter of reaching an agreement about how do we see ourselves in that political context, and what happens if there is a problem between the Basque area and Spain about how to regulate those problems. For example, if the Basque community, we had a referendum many, many years ago about joining NATO or not, and Spain voted yes, and the Basque area voted no. So the Basque nationalists will always argue, you know, we said no, and we were not respected, and we have the right to be respected. So it is difficult, because in the situations you are in, you are not, Spain cannot decide, well, we are going to be, but the Basque area is not. But it is important that at that level, what happens? How do you regulate that? And there are ways to regulate that. For example, that the Basque, as I said before, that the Basque government can say, well, we want to ask our people about this issue. But this time, in the case of NATO, we had a referendum for all Spain. But about many, many issues, we don't have referendums. People cannot be consulted. So the Basque government could have the capacity to consult, and that wouldn't suppose a legal obligation for the Spanish government, but it will be a democratic pressure on the Basque government. So what does it mean? It means that, imagine that we have a problem about economics, and the Basque government says, we want to know what the Basque people think about it, and the majority of the people supports the Basque government. The next step is negotiation. The next step is the Basque government going to Madrid and say, this is what the majority of people are saying. And in that democratic dialogue, the Spanish government will have to take care, will have to consider what the Basque population is saying. But it will be needed a new process of negotiation. So that's what I think we are going to.
Could you comment on the agreement with Catalonia and Spain?
Yeah, it is an agreement. It has a lot of symbolism as well, I think. It has more powers, and they were asking for, we have the system in Spain is that we have 17 autonomies, and they more or less have a very high level of autonomy, but the difference is that the Basque territories, well, the autonomous community and Navarra, we have the capacity to collect our own taxes, and Catalonia doesn't have that, and Catalonia wanted to have that. So the real, I think the, in terms of powers, that was the crucial thing. So they didn't get that power, but they had, I think, a better deal in terms how to organize their money, their taxes, etc. So it is, in Catalonia at the moment, there is a very hot discussion about this, because the whole government has collapsed because the government had socialists that are also in the ruling party in Madrid, but also had independentists, Catalan independentists. So the Catalan independentists do not agree with the agreement, and they are going to vote no in the next referendum that is coming in mid-June. So it's still a very complex situation in Catalonia, but I think what is happening is the normal way of dealing with it, is addressing the issue, political negotiation, agreement, and consultation. And probably after the referendum, we'll have a different political situation, but we will still have the necessity to address all those issues through dialogue. I think it's just sometimes we, you know, in the Basque area especially, we all consider ourselves the most democratic people in the world. You know, we are very democratic, and our history of democracy is 30 years. So the culture of democracy that we have is very poor. I didn't live dictatorship. I don't remember even the transition, but my culture is not a full democratic culture in terms of what I'm used to, like the way to deal with things. So I think in the Basque area and probably in Spain, we think that democracy means or dialogue, you reach the agreement and that's done. You know, the problem is gone, let's talk about other things. But it doesn't happen like that. I mean, we can reach the agreement, and after the agreement, you have to implement the agreement, and we'll be more and more. And this is the phase I think we haven't accepted yet. This will take a long time. The dilemma is to do it without violence.
Okay, we've got three more questions to take, actually four. If we can sort of make it quick, we'll try and end maybe about 10 minutes after, too. Let's start with John and Judy and this lady over here, and finally you, and then we'll finish up.
Yes.
So starting with John.
John Christ with Fellows Program. Again, I want to add my voice, Gorka, thanks for a thoughtful presentation and very thoughtful and analytical paper. I very appreciate that. I just wanted two quick questions. The first has to do with the issue of public opinion, and it's really an informational one. I'm kind of curious. I think if I understood the opinion surveys that you were summarizing on the charts, they were done within the Basque country. And I'm just curious if you can give us an update on what public opinion polls for the rest of Spanish society are saying about the permanent ceasefire, the estimate of ETA's intentions, et cetera, and so forth. And that is linked to the second question, which focuses more on your topic and the peace movement groups. You know, peace movement groups, as you well know, in a lot of different contexts, have operated in tandem with peace processes, but have often been in a position of brokering between communities on either side of a divide, whether it's two separate countries at war or an internal conflict. And I gathered from your talk and from the paper that that's not been a significant dimension in any of the three peace movement organizations that you've talked about. And I wonder if that's an accurate impression. And secondly, whether or not there is any potential for reaching outside of the Basque country to other potentially supportive constituents of the peace process, and whether movement organizations can play a role there, what the calculations might be of costs and benefits.
Can you repeat the last question?
Okay, the question was whether there's a role for peace movement organizations in the coming months to build alliances with, presumably there's some alliances already, it doesn't sound like a major amount, but to build alliances with potential supporters for a process outside the Basque country in other parts of the states of Spain.
Okay, great. Judy Barclay, USIP. Thank you for a really interesting presentation. Your work underscores the high degree of autonomy that the Basque people have already achieved. And one of your early slides made reference in passing to failed efforts to commemorate or symbolize the suffering of Basque people or whatever, or their national identity. Could you just expand on that a bit more and give us an example of a failed effort and why it failed, or if there's time, an example of a more positive effort and why that has been more successful?
My name is Nerea Aparicio. I'm working as a consultant at the Organization of the American State, and I'm asking this question because I'm from Bilbao. And I have to say that I don't agree with many points that you have expressed today, but my question is, if you said that the Basque people should have the right to have like more referendum to say if they agree with the national policy or not. Do you think that the Basque people should have to have a referendum to say if they agree to have this kind of broader autonomy? Because what I think is like maybe this movement that has been created in the last decade is not representing all the Basque. And maybe if you have this kind of referendum, we will say that we don't want to have this kind of broader autonomy. And I mean, maybe if you ask it to the French part of the Basque country, they will say, like, we don't have anything in common, a part of our language, with the Basque region in Spain. And I mean, and we are friends, and don't put, don't talk for us. And the same thing for Navarra, which has some links with the Basque, but not all Navarra. So I think that there is more like the idealist speech that that what the people really think about the issue.
And finally,
At the Mission Institute of Peace. In Russian, Gorka means small mountain. And I believe I that you have justified this name with your presentation. And my question is very short. Is it thinkable that now you can shift your attention to the Chechen problem?
Great. Okay. So in 5 minutes, answer whatever you can.
The public opinion in Spain, there are some surveys were presented this last week, said that there are 50% of the population, they don't trust very much ETA ceasefire. And then about 40-something percent, they are optimistic. That's more or less what the public opinion says. And
that include Basque.
That's the Basque
respondents in the survey.
That's the total. Yeah, the totals. Yeah. Normally, it happens as well. People tend to be to take a distance or to be we saw that in Ireland, a lot of places, that older people can be a little bit optimistic. They don't want to express that because it's like a defense mechanism, just in case the situation collapses. And in terms of the brokers, I think you are right. I think the peace organizations, they have been able to present these ideas, but we're not able to really to implement kind of cross-border, if you want to call it like that, dynamics. I think that was a failure. It could be some positive elements, and we used to repeat all the positive elements, but I think being fair, we didn't achieve that in the Basque area. In terms of alliance, I think we will need probably institutions, experts now. I don't think we are going to need a mediator, a very famous mediator or a government who will come and who will solve the problem for us. But we will need people who knows about how to deal with the victims, how to deal with the issue of the prisoners, how to deal about those very technical aspects of the process, that we'll need people that has the experience, who can come and work with us. And I think this is what we're probably need. It's a problematic thing because some people identify that as, you know, kind of external participation that they don't like. But I think there is a necessity to learn from others. And I think that's what we should do. Victims. Well, the fact is that the associations of victims, they feel that especially the Basque government, but the Basque nationalist parties, that they they didn't support them the way they should have during their difficult years of violence. Now they are the Basque government and the Spanish government, the parties, they will make statements about it. But there is a feeling that they didn't support them at that time. So I think at least there was a failure on communicating socially that support. And then also in very practical terms, now there are resources for the Association of Victims. There's reparation, but still, I think there is a necessity to have a social a commemoration of that. And in the positive side, we see that while the Spanish government has named just a person, a representative that is just full-time dedicated to deal with the Association of Victims, the Basque government has also an office and a direction to deal with victims, and they have presented a plan recently with initiatives to support the associations of victims, and they are now discussing about how all the memory should be incorporated. And this all the discussion about the memorials, and for example, one thing that I've been suggesting for many years is, for example, we don't have a record of the testimonies of the people. Because in our case, there are hundreds and thousands of people alive who are the relatives of the victims or people who suffer themselves directly the consequences of violence. And maybe they have had an event, but we need to collect, to go to those people and say, tell me what happened. Tell me your story. Tell me how you are. And I want that to know exactly how you are and what can I do for you, but I want that to be kept and to be organized in a way that this is not going to be forgotten. But still, I hope now will be the time for that. I totally agree with your comments in terms of the... what I was trying to say is that there is a possibility in terms of legal terms of agreement. There is a compromise between the positions of full independence or independence of the Basque nationalist community and the positions of the Spanish parties in terms of you can... I wasn't talking about the referendum for the independence of the Basque country. I was talking about the capacity to consult about certain issues.
But I was talking about the possibility to have a referendum in the Basque country to know, like, if the Basque people really support this kind of broad autonomy that you are talking about, and they are going to negotiate or not.
I totally agree that that should be asked, and I totally agree. I mean, in Navarra, in the French part, this is something that it doesn't exist. There is not a will for that. But responding to the demands, and that's why I said, in case of those people in those areas demand that. But I was talking specifically about the Basque Autonomous Region that has a nationalist government who has already presented a proposal of free association with Spain. But in any kind of consultation, I think it depends on what the majority of people say, first of all. And secondly, I think this cannot be resolved just with 51% majorities. I don't think it's possible. So consulting people also suppose, in my opinion, to have mechanisms to incorporate those different opinions. So that's why I don't see a black and white solution for the Basque area. I think it has to do first of all, respecting the majority of the areas, and secondly, implementing mechanisms to have a compromise between different sectors. That's my view on this point. And yes, and I think consultation always should be a mechanism to make this consensus bigger, broader, not to divide society. So I don't reject the possibility, because I think democratically opposing the possibility of consulting the society is something that it doesn't work. But having said that, there need to be mechanisms, of course, first of all, to see what is going on in Navarra and the French part. But doing so is not making a political statement, because what I'm saying is this is a reality. The Basque nationalists are in this area. ETA is operating in those areas. So we need to see what is going on in those areas. But I will definitely take your points totally.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that the consultation must be made through a referendum, or do you think that the political parties in the Basque country are the legitimate actors, like that what they decide it will be good for?
Well, I think my opinion on this is not very relevant.
No,
but right, I want to say, for me, both things are important. I think normally in Spain, in the Basque area, we face the discussion as a contradictory discussion. If you ask for a possibility to consult the people, you are taking the role of the parties away, or the opposite. And I think both things are totally complementary. I mean, the parties are the key actors. When we vote for elections, we are saying what we think, and that is the main dynamic. But that doesn't negate the possibility about certain issues that are important, and preparing the conditions for that a consultation could facilitate a solution. I think that that mechanisms should be incorporated. So I don't have a black and white answer to that. I think both things need to be taken into consideration.
Well, I think with that, we're already at quarter after two. We'll have to close. But I want to ask everyone to join me in thanking Gorka for such a wonderful presentation.